I'm Marilyn Rice Cub. You are listening to The Hole on riotcast.com.
Let it out.
If you would have cast Leah in the movie Secretary with James Spader, it would have been a 1 minute movie. He would have been like, get on your knees and like, fuck you. She would have walked down. It would have been quick.
I would have been James Spader, is what it is.
Yeah, you probably would have. And the guy would be crawling around on the floor.
There's your movie. That's your vehicle. We need to get that going.
All right, let's get it rolling. Welcome to The Hole, a very special hole. I am Rob Sprantz, and I am here at the world-famous Comedy Cellar with Leah Bonema, and we have a very, very special guest. And Chris Scopo was nice enough to come around the cameras. How you doing,
Thanks,
brother?
Chris.
We have Marilyn Rice Cub. The Rice Cub, as they call you.
I like it. Yeah, that's what they call me.
Yeah.
You're going to start that, and I'm going to start... You're the owner of the Comedy Cellar, right?
No, I wish I was.
We could just start saying that.
You could say, we could get it out there enough. Maybe, like, I'll get me more attention. Yeah. People will be nice to
the
me.
The Rice Cub.
The Rice Cub. I told my friend Kevin, who's a big Nerdist fan, and I know you have a podcast on there called Kicking It on Nerdist, and I said, you know, I have Marilyn coming on, and he said, his text was nice, the Rice Cub. Exactly what he said. And I gotta say, you know how when you read a name over and over and over again, but you never hear it said.
Yeah.
Like, for a while, before I knew how to pronounce your name, I was saying it in horrible ways and butchering it, which I'm sure most people do.
Terrible name.
So it's actually not. When it's said, it's a nice name to say, but when you look at the spelling,
it's not bad to say.
Yeah, it's all over. So you're here in the city for Stint at Caroline's, doing stand-up.
Yes.
And you started a stand-up.
I did.
Like, that was your thing well before you got on television. And
yes.
So you're enjoying it so far? This is like the first tour in a while, right?
Yes. This is really my first tour ever because I did comedy in the 90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I got a lot of stage time and did a lot of hanging out with a lot of people, but it was a real alternative scene, and you know, do something different on stage every time. I would do any show in the greater Los Angeles, San Francisco area. Made it to New York.
You have to do that rotten stuff where you have to pick up the headliner and drive them to the
I missed that whole thing.
Yeah, because that's the thing now. Like, a lot of... Yeah, Chris has to do that. He's got to pick up the headliner and drive him
Well, the
to
headliner
the show.
Appreciates that.
Maybe you can drive Mary Lynn around. You mind? You're not doing anything this weekend. All right, we're going to have Chris drive you around.
Okay.
Before that, I mean, what made you, like, want to do this? Like, you... I'm sure, like, everybody, when they're in high school, they want to be, hey, like, I want to be famous. I want to be a stand-up. I want to be TV. What goes off in your head that makes you want
to
do that?
No, I never wanted to do that.
You never did?
No,
still don't?
I still don't. No, I know. I was never somebody that thought I could ever even dream to have something like that. I just kind of had a need to express myself. I think it was a neurotic... implosion, as I was saying before we went on the air. So it just started, words started coming out of my mouth, and then people were laughing at me, and I didn't really know why they were laughing. Yeah. So I decided to direct that energy.
Yeah, because your delivery is very creative and funny, and you're not like, it's one thing that I envy about good comics or people with just good comic timing is the ability to say something funny and not laugh when it comes out. Like, that's always the thing that I hate about myself. Like, if I make a joke, I'm laughing. Like, I get all, like, excited that I'm saying it. But, like, especially in, like, all the things that you've done, like, your delivery is so straight on, and it makes it funnier. Like,
yeah,
I wish I had the ability to do it. It's just a natural gift. Leah has it,
theory.
Too, you know? But you know what I mean? Like, I think that's one of the hardest things. And maybe it's just because I'm a clown and I wind up laughing at my own jokes, which is the
worst thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Well, not when you're getting it out. It's like, it's almost, I think part of it is me trying to say at the end, like, hey, that was a joke. you know, like, hey, you see what I'm saying? So, like, what makes you...
You were laughing when I came up the stairs.
I was happy.
And I didn't even... You're like, there's a lot of boxes here.
Well, you had this...
I thought I'd come down and get you. Like, it wasn't a joke, but it felt like a joke.
Well,
and
it
felt like I knew you right away. So that's a good quality.
Well, that's a real
and
good quality.
And then I started laughing. I didn't know why I was laughing, because there are boxes in the hallway.
So maybe my delivery is really the good one.
I mean, that was a hilarious joke out there.
It's
we
endearing.
Didn't even know it.
Well, when
it's
I walked in,
it
just happened to be the day that they delivered a bunch of boxes. And sometimes... Sometimes when you have somebody come up, thank God we're at the cellar, but they're still walking up two flights of a very, you know, it's an apartment building. So, you know, I'm wondering, like, Mary Lynn's going to be like, what the fuck am I walking into?
Yeah.
You know, when you're coming up two flights of stairs and there's very little
light.
You
catch me running down the street.
Right. It's like, Mary Lynn, wait. Coming out the window.
She's got her mace out.
So what did you... Out of the two...
Rape whistle.
You could blow it at any time if you feel like you want to get out of here. Out of the two... What would you say makes you more nervous before you do stand up, before you act, or neither of them? Or you just do not get nervous beforehand?
It's a very carefully composed question.
Yeah.
They're just completely different things, both of which can make you nervous in different ways.
Okay. That makes sense.
You know, as you can imagine, stand up, it's complete strangers. You have to win them over. You don't have another chance, so you only have that moment. So what you learn after a while is, like, the nervousness doesn't really help you. But then sometimes if you hang back too much, then you're not connecting with them either. So you kind of have to jump over that edge of whatever you call it, nervousness or just the energy of the moment.
Yeah, and just kind of dive right into it. See, because I was thinking about
that. I mean, nervousness is like the anticipation of what's going to happen, right?
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, like, I was thinking of that, like, out of the two, I was thinking, wow, if I... Because it's such a different contrast that you're, you know, one minute you're on TV and then you're doing stand-up. And it's a different contrast when you're acting, and especially, like, in 24, where it's not so much comedy, it's more serious stuff.
Like, the thing I got nervous about in 24, this last 12 episodes that we did... What I realized about my character all that time was that she was always able to be sarcastic or bitchy or find some levity, even if the situation was really serious. And this time, the depth of the pain that my character was going through
right.
was so deep that she couldn't even be rude or sarcastic about it. And that kind of scared me, getting close to being vulnerable in that way and trying to, give off this, go to this place of pain, and then I was confronting Jack Bauer in the scene, right. And it was, you know, it was as exciting as it was nervous, because again, it's that challenge of, like, the anticipation of it, and then you just kind of have to jump off,
just
and
jump
get
in
into
and do it.
It.
Yeah, well, because your role has grown a lot on the show, like, it's become, and Kiefer fought for you to be on this season, right? Like,
oh, sure,
that was a word. Like, they just wanted him back. They didn't want to pay anybody as usual, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't think we want to get into all that.
Yeah, I don't think you want to either. but he did.
I don't want to burst that bubble of mystery.
But he, you know, it was at pretty widely out there that he was like, you know, without Mary Lynn, like, what's the point? And I get that. Like, a lot of 24 fans are pretty.
Yeah.
They're pretty intense. Like, Leah was telling
me
that.
I'm not sure if he told that to the business people in charge of the. Pocketbook.
Oh, okay.
Who kind of looked at me and were like, hey, she didn't get a pilot. She's sitting there waiting to play Chloe.
Yeah, I guess that's the way they think. It's unfortunate.
She's touring stand-up. Come on.
But at the same time, you know, when you on this role, and every single year people are, you know, without giving stuff away for those binge watchers, you know, but every single year people are dropping like flies off the show.
Always.
And you're a constant.
Well, that's the other thing too. Like, Kiefer, I know he wanted me on the show, and even people wanted me on it, but at the same time, there's never an assumption that you won't be killed, you know?
Yeah.
I think Kiefer's probably the only one that could keep himself from being killed.
I would think, you know what? And you never know. At one point or another, they're going to have to end it somehow. But so do you find out that it's coming back before everybody else knows? Do they say? Because usually in the beginning, they're not even written yet. They're just saying, hey, guess what? We're bringing the show back. So do you know then, or do you hear like on television that the show's coming back and you haven't been reached out to yet?
Yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Because I was talking to Judy Greer on Arrested Development, which you're also on.
Yes.
You're on like my favorite. You're on Larry Sand. We're going to get to all. And she said the same thing. She said she found out Arrested Development was coming back just like on television.
Yeah.
She was with Portia de Rossi and they just saw it on TV. And so
that's
I didn't
hilarious.
Even know it was coming
that
back.
That makes me feel better.
Yeah. So you weren't the only one.
Well, you know, in terms of the fans that, because I get Twittered constantly and it's very cool, you know, it's a really cool thing, but they assume that I know stuff, so I just act like I know stuff, but right. really, I don't, you know?
So you get
people like want to know when they see me, like rightfully so, they're like, are there more, what's going to happen? Is the movie happening? I'm like,
Well, you don't
nobody
know.
Tells me anything.
Well, even
they get everything else in place, and then they, you know, decide to pick up the phone and call me
last minute when it's all ready. Yeah. Because Leah said even after your stand-up, because she went to see you, said you were excellent last night.
Thanks, Leah.
Thanks,
buddy.
And she said that tons of 24 fans were like, you know.
Well, they had like such specific questions that it was like phenomenal. They were like in the second episode on the third when you had this kind of a gun and this thing went off and you were like, I have this detail.
Was that weird? And I didn't even know you, but I went up to you as like a fellow comic and I was like, why did I bother doing my act? Like, because I can't, to someone that's a huge fan of the show, again, a wonderful thing, but to somebody who like me, I still think of myself as like a self-hating like comic, like I'm just trying to, you know, you don't really make the connection, but you have to represent. So I stand on stage and I'm like, does anyone have any questions? Like that feels like the weirdest thing to do, but once I opened it up, it was like, and this thing and on that thing, and then I realized, I'm like, wow, I've done a lot of stuff and people like love this and
yeah,
you know,
and they get engaged.
Why do I bother working on an act? I could just stand there and answer questions.
Yeah, you do a Q&A, show an episode, do a Q&A. Well, the first time that I saw you was actually on Mr. Show.
Yes.
Which was out there in a lot of different ways. And frankly, when I watch it now, it would never be on TV now. No one would ever roll the dice on it, I don't think.
You don't think so? I mean, in another way, there's so much content, and there's a need for so much content.
True, but I think reality's eating away the need for anybody to try to do anything different in a lot of ways. Like,
Mr. Show would probably have its find its way into some other place,
like Netflix.
Yeah, I could see that, because it was one of the most creative and original type of sketch comedy shows. There's a little of Monty Python in there where they would kind of blend one sketch right into another. But I read something about it that kind of infuriated me. I think you know where I'm going with
this. Now what?
I read, and I don't know, and if it's not true, you can tell me, but for what I understand, you got on the show because you were dating David Cross. Same time it coincided.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that, but to me it was like, I was hanging out with that whole group of people, and I like to think, yes, I was dating him. I like to think it's because they thought I was funny, too. Mm-hmm. I mean,
That's not the part that bothered me. The part that bothered me was that...
That I was fired?
Yes, you were fired because you broke up, was the way it was worded.
That is true.
That infuriated me.
Because I was no longer funny to be around. I broke his heart.
Yeah, see, that's...
So...
That's that, really... That was... very disappointing, because like I think of the show as a full entity, and then I realize I'm like, you know what, that's true. I think about later sketches and you weren't involved in it.
It was a very it was a comedy clique. It wasn't like straight casting. It wasn't a regular show. It wasn't like I'm gonna cast the part of the girl who throws the baby on the ground. So you could just say, I got the part because we were dating, but really it was more like this was a whole group of people, and those were the people that are around, and everybody was friends with each other. It really was very organic. So in the spirit of that, it's like also organic to be like, we don't want you around anymore, and we're the guys that are in charge of the show. I mean, why not? I think it would be, if it were, I was on Friends and I went through casting and then I got fired. That would be a different situation, but it was a very...
So it was kind of like a group of friends got the show.
And yeah.
I still didn't like the fact that that's a terrible reason to lose a gig. I just think it is. I don't know.
I agree with you, but now that, I have the time away from it. It was incredibly painful for me because mm-hmm. that was like, I loved being around it. But, you know, I'm sure it was for him too. Yeah. There was nothing better to me. I would just jump up and down and just so happy. I couldn't believe that these guys got to make a show. And I saw how it happened and I saw the live shows that it developed from. And it was so exciting. But now looking back on it, it's like, I don't blame him. You know, it's their show. They get to, it's not like as if it was Chloe or a character. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Say,
I'm not really,
because it's more sketch. And well. I know what you're saying, though.
It's their vision. Hmm. And yes, I played parts on it, but it really was
their thing.
Them. It wasn't like I brought my own sketch. I mean, I did bring stuff to it, but.
And your answer clarifies that so much, because when you read something, you read it and it just seems like, oh, fuck him, you know.
But I mean, I've said that before. It is kind of true, but it's just kind of juicy to say it that way. Like, it makes it sound,
yeah,
and it was very dramatic, but
yeah. Well, when I list,
it's cool, man.
Well, it worked out, because whenever I list my favorite television shows of all time, especially on comedies, number one is always The Larry Sanders Show. I think it's that and Arrested Development are really up there. So you're kind of coming at me from all angles with that. But Larry Sanders Show, I think, was ahead of its time as far as the fact that it didn't really have any kind of a laugh track or anything back in the day when most shows did.
Yeah.
The way that they had the show, but at the same time did the behind the scenes was great. How do you wind up on that?
My manager at the time was Janine Garofalo's manager. And I'm trying to think. I think he was like Brian Posehn's manager, Doug Benson, back in the time. Again, it was all part of the same clique. And he had a tape of me doing stand-up comedy, which was at the time very performance arty. Like, I was just, it was almost like I was in character. Mm-hmm. And I really wasn't trying to be. I just didn't have a capacity to speak my mind and say what I was talking about. So I would, you know, hold up drawings and say, like, I just took ecstasy a minute ago. And, you know, like, it was conceptual, but it really was like I was just doing what I could do to be on stage and do comedy. So he showed the tape to Gary Shandling and John Rigi. And they called me in for an audition.
And at the time, the show was already rolling. Like, you're
that
about
was,
three seasons in,
I think,
right?
Yeah, it was when Janine was leaving. So mm-hmm. it really was, like, as a replacement for her in a way. Yeah.
Are these chairs uncomfortable? We just got
new
chairs.
It's, like, rolling downhill.
Yeah, we need to do something about
That's
these.
That's all.
All right.
Well, the chair itself is very comfortable.
Chris, go hold the chair the whole time.
Chris.
So when you get on that set, I mean, you've got Gary, of course, Jeffrey Tambor.
Yeah.
I mean, and everybody's kind of firing full cylinder. But so I guess, did you know Janine? Were you friends with Janine?
Yes.
So it's perfect. It kind of eased you into it a little bit.
Yeah. I had a great scene with her where she's training me to do her job.
Right.
Which is, you know, that's also the beauty of that show. It's like a couple steps from real life.
Uh-huh.
There's also an episode with Sarah Silverman, who was my roommate, and he, you know, cast us as friends in the show, and that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the kind of thing where it kind of seemed like it might be more episodes, but it ended up only being that one.
Right, and that was the one where I think they accused you of booking her because she was your friend. Was that what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. I'm getting like the 24 fans now. I'm getting a little too overboard with it. I mean, that show and that one where she's training you and you know, you the panic, and
yeah.
I think that might have been the beginning of the Chloe pout face, which everybody seems to be taking group shots now.
Yeah.
That's a new thing now, the Chloe pout face.
Yeah.
Everyone takes that shot.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. You start a little phenomenon like that.
It is cool.
Right?
Very weird.
Does that feel weird to you? Like when people that you don't know just start coming up to you and be like and talk to you almost like they talk to you almost like you're the character more so than the person?
Of course. You know, it's a double edged sword. It's awesome, but very weird at the same time.
Yeah, I can see that. And you know, from Larry Sanders, 24 happens pretty much about 5 years later than that, about?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, and so how do you wind up on that show? I mean, I'm sure it's the same premise pretty much over and over again. Where
Larry Sanders and 24 were two of my most amazing casting experiences, because with Gary Shandling and John Rigi, they called me in for the audition, and those are people that work together, and Gary has a vision. He knows what he wants. He, feels like it's a good fit and kind of goes for it. Mm-hmm. And that's like the best possible way to create something, in my opinion, is to have the strong voice at the top of it, kind of calling all the shots and shaping the whole thing. And, you know, my audition was just me, like, making faces at him and John Rigi and being like, I don't know, what are you guys doing? And it was a total blast, but it wasn't about memorizing material and sitting in the hallway with, you know, the redheaded and brunette version of me and, like, there's the heavier one, there's the skinnier one, you know, like, we're just trying to find... It was like someone who was like, that, something is funny in that... We're going to bring you in the room just to see, like, if it vibes, and then we're just going to, like, go for it. And,
that's good.
And create with that. And it was a similar thing to 24, just a really dream come true kind of scenario where the creator of 24, Joel Surnow, had seen me in a movie called Punch Drunk Love, which is a Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
Excellent.
So I played a bitchy, overbearing sister, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to go in on the audition. I tried not to go in because I had just... I had a tanked in another drama. It was like for CSI or something, and I did really poorly. So I was like, I just can't bear it right now. And
like,
said,
how much do you hate that whole audition process? It just seems so, like you mentioned organic when you talked about Mr. Show. It seems the complete opposite of organic. It almost seems like how could you possibly find the right person in such a weird, cold setting that has nothing to do with...
Well, it depends on the people who are in charge of it. I've definitely made a lot more peace with it than I did before. I mean, I think I used to have so much neuroses that I almost saw everybody outside of me as, like, the enemy. Even in my early stand-up sets, it would be like, what do you guys want from me? And that's, like, coming from, like... personal issues, you know, is what the comedy comes from. So I used to go to auditions and be like, oh, the casting director's mad at me. And it's like, no, you are immature and you have no ability to be around other people very well, you know? Like, I would wear a men's t-shirt, you know, and like barely brush my hair. Like, why do they keep casting me as the weird, quirky girl? I don't know. Maybe because you act like a fucking weirdo, you know? Maybe that's it. So, you know, as I kind of matured, because I did approach this from an organic, you know, I don't know how you want to describe it. First started talking about it, I didn't go to LA going, I'm going to be a star with my headshots and, you know, my suit and tie.
Right.
And like, here's what I'm going to talk about, world. So it was this sort of angsty person, a performer, but I didn't know really how to be in the world. So,
so you weren't even thinking about television or anything. You were just kind of just doing what you felt like doing.
And once it started working, I loved it, but that didn't mean I understood the process or I wasn't terrified of other people, you know. Mm. So, yeah, the audition process could be described as, like, cold, but the more you're around it, the more you realize it's just kind of a necessary evil. And dare I say, it could be enjoyable if you... And one thing I've learned is, like, hey, learn your lines.
Yeah, that's big.
You know, and there's people who train as actors, and they understand that very early on. I did not. And you know, yeah, it's hard. Yeah, there's a lot of rejection. But there are people that actually enjoy the process because they go in prepared, and they realize it's a chance to perform. That's a way to look at it as well.
See, like, it's so... Do you want to talk about paranoia? Like, I would be so worried about being... I don't know if I could memorize all of it. Like, that would be the part.
Well, yeah.
I suck. Like,
it happened to me on the way here. There was a really good HBO show, and I don't get to New York that often, and I'm doing Caroline's, and so I had all these meetings, and it was literally, not to brag, you guys, but I had, like, all this press, like, back-to-back, which is awesome, you know? Yeah. It feels cool. It's like, oh, I'm going to New York, and I'm doing stuff. I'm like, wow, how am I going to do this? And then I get this audition for this drama, And I was angry about it because it's 12 pages of full dialogue. It's of a lawyer.
Wow.
And it's this really amazing, high caliber show. And I was instantly like, oh, they think I can just pull this out of my ass? What, I'm just going to fit this in my spare hour? Well, that's like anxiety.
Yeah.
Because I'm scared. Okay? I'm scared of the words. I'm like, I can't even read through this, like, let alone prepare for it.
And you
so
have
I started blaming everybody else when really it's my own anxiety about not believing that I could do it.
That makes sense. How long did you have before they gave it to you and they wanted to read?
A fucking day.
That's crazy.
It's retarded.
That is crazy. It's retarded. See, I would freak out. I would really freak out. I can totally get why you would. So did you go already? You did it? Did it go?
I did it. You want to hear something really sweet?
Uh-huh.
I started bitching about it to my husband. I'm like, yeah, can you believe that? Oh, yeah, I'm just supposed to switch gears. I only have 6 shows at Caroline's. And, you know, some podcasts to do. I'm all full up. Like, who do they think I am? And he goes, I think you can do it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah. Yeah, I believe you can.
And that was it.
And then... yeah, and then I just, like, drilled it on the plane, and then after I landed, I got an email that was like, oh, you only have to prepare one scene. And I was like, hey, that would have been good information. Remember when I was freaking out? You might have told me that before I drilled the 12 pages on my 5-hour.
Oh, that was funny. You should, when you were done with the audition, be like, no, I'm not done. I've still got 3
I have more. So that, you know, and then they were really cool and accommodating when I... was able to come in there and Greg from Caroline's, I was like running it to him. He was giving me notes.
That's
quite
cool.
Helpful. That's so it ended cool. up being kind of fun, you know? So by the time I got there, I did do 2 scenes because I was like, well, I kind of have this one half prepared, you know?
Right.
And she's like, cool, whatever you want to do.
That is cool.
And then I had to admit, I was like, it's kind of fun. But there's always like a resistance, I think. Whenever you approach wanting to do something, you're always going to be scared to do it, especially if you care about it.
You nailed it. And because that's exactly like anytime I have guests on, I get Leo tight. I get nervous. Like, I just want everything to go well, and I want all the technical sides to go well, and I want it to just be fun for everybody. And like, whenever I do it, I'm like, yes, this is gonna be fun. And then for about 3 or 4 days beforehand, I'm like, why did I do this? Yeah, I go through the whole thing. I go through the whole process. You know, my poor wife this morning, you know, I'm just not really talking. I'm just like looking at notes and I'm looking at things.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, like that's just me. That's how I am. And Leah tells me to shut up when I'm here. You know, she's like, just stop. You're fine. Just shut up.
I think it's really nice that you care.
Well, why wouldn't you? I mean, you know.
Some people are just...
Well, I mean, I'm sure you've done good shows and bad shows, you know, as far as being guests on things, people not prepared, people not saying your name properly, little things like that too. But we got off on the 24 thing. Like, you know, how far into it do you realize, wow, this show is actually something special, like this is catching on? Because a lot of times, and not so much, you know, like you mentioned a show that you did that or just kind of fizzled out, or that happens a lot.
Well, 24 was a total, it was already a phenomenon before I started on it. I started in season 3.
Right,
it was actually building, you know, season 5, it was at like fever pitch. That's when we were winning awards and stuff like that. But it was, people were into it by season 3 when I got on it.
Yeah, because when you got on it, like, you stuck. Like, that was a...
Yeah.
I think everybody needs, like, a Chloe in their life. Like, to be... Like, they wish they had a Chloe. Like, they could just be like, you know, Chloe, where are my socks? You know, like, like, just even the most basic thing. I guess that's what a husband or a wife is, you know? But, like, everybody needs that. So when you... I don't know, the chemistry you have with Kiefer on that, it just really works. The way you do the character, I don't know, it's hard for me to articulate.
It's completely
it,
accidental and organic. And also, especially some of the early episodes, a little bit of character goes a long way on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of times with Kiefer where we're not even in the same room. We're on the phone, you know, but it still is like...
That's true.
This
because
relationship.
It's true. Because a lot of times you're just looking at a monitor and just kind of talking to the monitor. That's pretty cool. And then you mentioned Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yes.
Punch Drunk Love was, I think, one of his most underrated movies. It's the complete opposite of the other things that he's done. It's just 90 minutes, and it's, you know,
his version of a romantic comedy,
yes,
which is awesome.
Yeah. And
I remember when we were filming that, I thought Adam Sandler, I was so excited at what Adam was doing and his performance and where he was going emotionally with it and the anger stuff, I was just like, he's going to blow people's minds. Yeah. Like, it's going to be amazing. And what ended up happening was nobody wanted to see him like that.
I know.
Like, it's hard. People, I mean, you could say that's lame because people just want the Adam Sandler that they already got and they want him, like, goofy and they don't want to see more of him. But it's like, it was uncomfortable, you know? That yeah. character is like, that's a little bit hard to watch, I think.
It is, but I think it's probably one of his best, you know, yeah. the best films that he's in. And, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson, he had done, I think you were in a scene in Magnolia, because I remember, in yeah. like, it was a deleted scene almost, I think, right? Yeah. It was not in it. I can't remember the scene. I just remember seeing you in it back then. So it was good that you actually got to actually do yes. something with him, because, you know, movie after movie, he's getting better and better and better.
Yeah.
And he was fantastic right out of the gate with Hard Eight and Boogie Nights. So, yep. you know, right away, that's a great director to work with. And you, is he any different than anybody else as far as, like, his method? Is he a strange kind of guy or?
Oh, yeah, he's totally strange. I mean, it's been years since I've been around that atmosphere or seen him, but he's very much, you know, the artist with his vision and everybody else follows suit.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that I've never seen before. It's like the guys down at the truck with the, you know, equipment that are nowhere near the set, you feel the energy of, like, I'm on a Paul Thomas Anderson film, and that takes a really strong vision to kind of have the whole crew geared towards, you know, because sometimes you'll be on a set and people will be dicking around and you're like, does everyone forget that it's about this is what it's about, and things can become, like, sort of separated and not unified in that vision, and he is really amazing at being that.
Yeah, I guess when you trust the guy who's putting it all together, it's probably a lot easier to just throw in and go.
Well, trust him,
it.
But it's also, he's the one that's setting that tone, he's the one that's giving that message, and that takes a certain kind of person who is paying attention to all the details of their production, and he's one of those people, you know.
Mm. Now on television shows, every episode has a different director almost, or they rotate directors. Is that the case on 24 too? Because I've noticed, like, you ever see, like, the creator is always the same,
yeah,
but the director seems to change from episode to episode. I think because of the turnaround time, they can't possibly direct everyone, unless, like, True Detective is one that just came out where one director did the entire thing from beginning to end.
Oh, really?
Does that happen on 24? It's the same director for everyone.
They do rotate a little bit, but we tend to have, you know, maybe like five or six different directors when it used to be 24. So you might have a director do 2, 3, 4, 5 episodes in a row, and then it would switch to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have John Cassar, who's been there since the beginning, and he's somebody who's really... well, actually, all the people that once they start repeating being the director, you know, you get used to the tone and the shape of the show. So it is hard when a brand new director comes in, but usually we have like that five or six, those people that know the show and that can rotate episodes.
So that's why, because the tone doesn't really change. It always kind of stays constant, even though the director's
changed.
The
tone, the style of filming, the things that you focus on and how the camera moves and knowing how it's going to be edited together and the pacing of it. Mm-hmm. Those are all, you know, those technical things that you kind of have to hit the ground running, and you can't, there's not a lot of time because we shoot a lot per day and there's two cameras going all at the same time. So it's not really the place. Like, there are some directors and it works really well, and you appreciate who, especially as an actor, who you come in and they'll kind of figure it out while they're doing it, mm-hmm. and it starts taking time, or they want to, like, really cover it a lot more than necessary, because 24, we it's a drama, and there, you know, it has all that action and explosions and stuff like that, but we work really quickly, so it's like whoever is going into that has to already know how they want the shots and how they know it's going to go to just keep it moving.
To keep it moving all the time. So if when a season starts, and I know this season was cut down to 12, which a lot of people are saying was a better move because it was a lot tighter.
Yeah, I've been hearing good things about it.
Yeah, so like that, is that even a tighter schedule? Like, do you?
No, I mean, it pretty much felt the same. The only thing that was different was like, oh, we're done. Because usually we'd film 10 months out of the year, and this was about five, six right. months.
And there's no break. You just go straight through.
So, right. I mean, we have weekends off.
Wow. So Monday through Friday, pretty much for 10 months straight. That's cool you have weekends off, though.
Yeah.
I didn't think it would be like that. Like, I don't know. I'm so used to maybe hearing about, like, how indies get shot where they like, 24/7 they're just filming, you know?
Yeah.
And then to go from that to... This is... It's, when I put out that you were coming on, Gail the Snail.
Oh, yeah.
From It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That... pretty much everybody was like, oh, Gail, it's either you were Chloe or Gail the Snail or Chloe and Gail the Snail. That show, like, how'd you wind up with those guys?
I knew Caitlin from years ago. Caitlin and I actually did a sketch comedy show, and she did it. I swayed her to do it. Paul Tompkins was on it. And it was a, it was a recreation of an English show, and we all went to England. It ended up turning out really bad. Uh-huh. And she, but she was kind of like, yeah, well, we just laugh about it, but she's like, oh, Mary Lynn's in it. Like, oh, this will be so fun. And we had, you know, we had like the highest hopes for it, and it was not a very fun experience, but we bonded and we knew each other since then. And so I think that's how the rest of the guys were familiar with me, through her, and or I kind of knew them peripherally, and they knew me, and they asked me if I wanted to do it, and I went in, and that was awesome, because they asked me to do it, and I read it, and I was like, fuck yeah, this is
amazing. You get to do whatever you want.
And I was a little bit nervous, because it was on that show, like, they're already so gross and crude, so then you have this character, and I was like, whoa, like, I don't know how I'm gonna do this. Because I'm not really, like, a sketch person in that way. Not that it would be a sketch character, but it was pretty over the top.
Right.
And that turned out to be a real fear, because when we went there, when we started filming it, they're like, we still like you. Because I was playing it real, you know what I mean? Like, just, and they're like, we still like
the
you, though.
Noise
it has to be, it has to get to the point where we want to throw salt on you and make you go away. And they were all, we were all collaborating and like improvising. They're like, you got to be grosser, man. And they'd send me back to the makeup trailer. And they're like, and yeah, it just got, I just got like, I just kept going in and going like, and then by the end, it's like that whole spit thing. And we were all like laughing. They're like, oh my God, that's so gross. And I just kept adding things on and like trying things and like, is this gross? Is this gross? You know, and it just, was awesome. It was like, I feel like she's this disgusting person that's inside of me and that I let her out. And I actually did another episode, which was the Thanksgiving episode. And I had a whole sequence that they had to cut out. I think it was just too tangential because there were all those characters and they couldn't it had made no sense to like the driving story. But I could not believe what I did was so gross. I was like humping a pillow and my ass crack was showing, and I was staring Caitlin in the eye and like making the weird noises and like glazing my eyes over. And when she first comes in the room, I'm like looking for pot, like, or nubs of hash or something. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And then I'm like rubbing up against her. And it's just stuff that for comedy, I'm like, oh, yeah, you want me to show my ass crack? Like, if it was an actual sex scene or something, I'd be like, I don't know. Like, discuss
let's
this.
Let's see if it's real.
Because it was for like, I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to do this right now. And again, I was like, I felt so dirty. And then afterwards, I was like, I feel different now. Yeah. I feel different that I was that.
That the noise really is just like,
oh, another
disgust.
Thing they cut was they had me saying like, I think they had me saying the N-word. Like, I was like, what's up, my niggas? And Charlie's like, did you? And I'm like, yeah, I'm hip hop now. But I kept saying, like, when we were doing it, and again, you just like, it's so wrong, but you're just like, whoa.
I still go around and do the what? I don't know why. You're blowing up. See, you're blowing up right now. Ooh. This must be the audition.
What is happening?
I don't know.
You got the part.
You're blowing him. That's what it is. I hope so. Okay, watch out. Let me fix this. I don't want to drop your phone. Yeah, because that was incredibly disgusting, but it's disgusting in a fucking hysterical way.
Like, I love her. She's
and
so gross.
So just a
like giving Danny DeVito a hand job
under the table
while your mom is on the other side of the counter there. Oh my God.
Do you know when you search, you know when you search Google for something and it auto completes the search?
Yeah.
So do you know what it auto completes? Because it pulls the most searched things. Do you know what it auto completes for your name?
No.
If you type Mary Lynn Ricecomb, the first, and I'm going to do it again right now just to see. It's Mary Lynn Ricecomb. The first one is feet.
Oh, that's creepy.
Isn't that creepy? Mary Lynn.
You know
Ricecomb,
what? I've seen that.
Feet.
And I've seen that before. It'll come up with other actresses and stuff. Like, try it with somebody else.
Is this okay? Let's try it. All right, let's see. Let's try Gwyneth Paltrow. Gwyneth.
It'll come up like okay. Third or fourth.
You get Gwyneth Paltrow. This one you have diet and blog. This one you don't have feet.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I feel like she's a specific because of that whole thing she said about.
Maybe
her,
people don't want to look at her feet anymore.
Maybe her
they're
feet.
Like angry. They're not even looking at her feet with their politics.
Your feet blow hers away.
Oh yeah.
Can you mind taking this off the table? It's like gonna go through the microphone. Sorry.
What's happening?
I don't know. Just make sure there's no emergency. Is it Kiefer? Does it need you?
Kiefer's calling.
Is it trouble? Is it trouble?
No. You know what? I think it's like it's Twitter or something.
So because it brings up feet and that is kind of creepy.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask like what's. Do you have any story of a creepy fan maybe that got too weird on you at any point? Is this the creepiest thing like a fan's done? Where you were like, oh, like you walked away and like you thought about it later. Like that was just
I mean, I don't know. There's shades of creepy all the time, but it's nothing like. Nothing dangerous has ever happened. Like I was in that Japanese department store today. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
It's huge. I got this shirt there. It's like, I forgot what it's called.
Uniqlo?
Yeah, Uniqlo, right? By MoMA. And they have MoMA t-shirts, and it's like floors of like basics and stuff like that.
I think it's Uniqlo.
Anyway, I'm saying this because it wasn't... It would probably the story would have been better if I was like, I was in Victoria's Secret. But they have like rows and rows of like puffy jackets and t-shirts, and like one section is like underwear. But it's jammed with people, right? Yeah. And I literally touched underwear and went to look at it. And I'm just, like, thinking about buying underwear.
Like a normal person would do.
And there's somebody right next to me like, Chloe? We are your fans.
Oh.
We are from France. And it was just weird, like, oh, my God. I'm looking at underwear. Like, please don't look at me right now.
Maybe that's why your Twitter's going off is pictures of you, you shopping for underwear.
But yeah, not like creepy, but just like you're just having a moment. You might be holding some underwear, and then someone's like, can I get my picture with you?
Yeah, because nobody seems to really care what mood you're in.
I didn't wash my hair, and I haven't, you know, I'm just walking around looking at underwear, but okay.
But okay, you hold up the underwear.
Yeah. That's what I should have done.
It's very alien. So you're Sigourney Weaver killing the alien in your white undies.
Oh, I like where your mind went with that a lot. I should have been like, hey, would you guys mind if I tried these on?
Take a
picture. Do you have a look? Tell me how they look.
You start doing that. Oh, that would be bad. It'd be good, actually, but it'd be bad for you probably in the long run. Like, that would be, you know, all of these comedians apologize for things. That would probably be like, why is Mary Lynn running around Manhattan and then in her underwear with an alien DVD?
That'd be awesome. I mean, just people hugging me. There's a one woman who was a huge fan talking to me, and then it's like that thing where I couldn't go anywhere, and I was still there with her, and we had all of her moments with me, and then she's like, and you could see her mind like go, oh wait a second, I have a chance, like I still have her here, so she goes, are you seeing Kiefer later? Like, and she's like, do you know where he is? Do you know where he's staying? Like, you could just see her go, like, I'm going to go for it. Because I don't know, maybe. Like,
you
she thought
know.
She almost thought I was going to get his number or something.
Oh, like, you were like,
and in
come
a weird
on,
way, that
out.
Was even creepier to me. Because it wasn't, you know, I'm standing there with her. But then she thought she could get to him through me.
Yeah, I think the people that would talk to you in character would probably, like, they kind of, like, too much Chloe and not enough Mary Lynn. Like, they don't kind of separate the two. Those are the things that would probably creep me out if they were just,
well,
like,
that was up at my comedy show.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And then when you, so you just, how far into it did you go Q&A?
I did it at the very end, but I try to hit the 24 at the beginning and just banter with people to just kind of feel it out and diffuse it a little bit. I mean, some of the shows, you know stand-ups, it's like you could have the best show and then the next show you're like, oh God, why am I doing this? But especially when you're doing six shows, it's they're all going to be kind of different, and sometimes it's amazing and it's like, oh, I'm so glad I'm doing this and people get it and they're on board and they're right there with it. And then last night, it wasn't a bad show, it was a good show, but there's a part of me, and the Q&A was really fun, but I just ended it and I was like, why am I making them sit through my comedy? It feels like I'm going upstream. Like, why did I spend time working on this when really they just wanted to watch the DVD and, you know, ask questions?
But it's good, though. Are you ever?
I know. I shouldn't even be saying it out loud, really. It sounds
no,
like...
No, it's an honest...
Ridiculous.
It's an honest reaction. I think anything...
It's
anybody
not
ever,
a bad a problem.
But
like,
I feel like
it's
that's
all
the
good, but
that's why you're a stand-up comic, because you're, like, analyzing it and being like, why am I doing this? And that's your personality. Look, as a stand-up comic that's overanalyzing and being like, what?
Yeah,
I'm
perfect,
bad about it.
Perfect example. Leah had a set. Was she was on Access TV. She had a set on, and it was live from Gotham here in the city, and I watched it, and she was great. And all I did, and whether this was great or a mistake, I was so happy for her, and I texted her. I said, Leah, I saw your set, you were great. And I got just like a whole insecurity flow.
What
of
did you say? Was, I love it. It makes me feel so much better.
I had my hair blown out, which I don't normally
That's
do.
One. Oh, it gets worse.
And
it gets worse.
And it kept falling. And I do a lot of facial expressions, so I like felt like I was moving it. But then I felt like I was moving it too much, and it was like I had some kind of a tick. So then I felt like I couldn't not do that anymore. And then I throw my hands around like some of the fucking crazy Italian I am. God. So I was like, are my hands moving too much? And then... What was the other thing I was obsessed about?
Did I say right too much?
I said right.
Oh my gosh, this makes me feel so much better.
I said, you know, and then I said, I think I counted twice in my head that I said it. I still haven't watched the whole thing because it makes me want to vomit. I love it. It was a great show and I'm so thankful to be on it. But when I watch myself, I have to
It's so hard to watch yourself, right?
And I said, you know what I mean? And I hate it when I say, you know what I mean. So I think I asked you if you could count how many times I said that.
Mary Lynn, it wasn't even like her asking. Like when you watch it, you're not watching how many times a person touches their head. You're not watching how many times I say you're following it, and I'm laughing.
I think I said, did you notice that my lip was stuck to my upper teeth?
Yes, my lip was stuck. Yeah, my lip was stuck, and it was just
it makes me feel so much better.
It's
my hair was falling, my lip was stuck, I was moving my hands.
It looks like I'm giving everybody the middle finger because of the way I pointed shit.
This is exactly
what
bothered me is that I said, you know, that's not, I don't need to add, you know, I'm not looking for reciprocation. Yeah. That's not necessary.
You know how many times?
I said it twice in 9 minutes.
That's not bad. That's not a lot.
It's not.
It's actually not a lot.
I felt like, and
I felt like I've gone
reallys.
Through times where I'll say like every other word and I want to stab myself.
But people, I do that with you know.
Yeah.
But people don't pay attention to that. That's the thing. Like, you know how many times like I'll get home and my wife will be like, you know, had the show go. It's, I don't know, it's hard to explain. And then I listen back, and I liked, this was where, you know, it went really well. And all the little things in my head that go on, just go on in your own head.
Yeah.
That's what I would think about. That's why what you were saying last night about, oh, I should have just, that's just the way you think. It's not true necessarily.
Well, one of my big things, and what I've learned from friends who are road comics and concentrating on my comedy this past 2 years, is even when you think that a comedian is like being loose at the beginning, most of the time they're going to go right into material. Mm-hmm. And my downfall has always been, oh, it's almost like a self-sabotage where I'll be so loose at the beginning that I'm like, just...
I actually really like that.
Well, okay, here's the thing. Here's what I'm getting at. I've been working really hard to be more concise, because a big thing when I started, you know, I would mumble, I would interrupt myself, I would look down, and it's like people, you got to give people a rope. You got to let them know what you're talking about, and you can't, like, I was freaky to the point of like, never mind, like editing in my head, right. as I, you know, and it's just like, no one can follow you, and it's too loose, and you know, you want to, you hate yourself when you
but
watch
I
it.
But I liked what you did.
But
which
so
was...
I was like, I'm working on the comedy, but now it's to the point where I like being loose, but then I hate on myself for it. So it's this weird. I think it's a good thing to be loose, but then I also want to make sure that I, you know what I mean? I feel like I'm disrespecting comedy if I don't go into material, because you don't want to be like, you're just messing around with like no payoff.
You're transitioning from what was happening before to inviting people into you. And right. So I do think that it's nice to have a little banter up front. People were, you know what I mean? You're getting,
I almost have to now because there's a 24 thing.
Yeah,
where,
and I thought that was a great, I think that's the first thing I said to you, where I liked what you did in the beginning, and then you went into the crowd, and you, it doesn't yeah. look like mumbling or anything. It looks like you're inviting people in. This is what we're doing. I'm right. setting up who I am. We're talking about the show, and then I'm going into my stories.
Right.
And I thought the crowd work worked well for that. And then you went into your jokes.
Right. That's true. I guess I have to not be afraid to do that.
I think you should do what it is you like. And if that's what you like to do at the beginning, then do that.
Yeah.
See, but I think it's awesome to know that no matter where somebody is, they have the same paranoia
about themselves.
It's really great to know that.
It's
you
great
know?
To know that you yeah. just invest in antacid.
And there's always a better way to do it. You're always going to watch yourself and be like, I moved my hands. Why? You know, or I didn't say that word right.
But that's what's great about comedy.
Yeah.
It's like relentless on yourself. You're like, I'm never going to fucking feel, which I think it keeps. I mean,
yeah.
Would you love it if it wasn't like something that it was? You
right.
know what I mean?
Right. It's like yeah. an impossible
it's like a
task. It is a beast. And that's the beauty of it, is yeah. because it's live and it's always going to be kind of different.
Mm-hmm.
Do you watch them back or no?
I try to, but my friend taped me, and it was so far at Caroline's. Of course, you know, I loved the show on Thursday night, and then Friday, I was like, I can't even watch this. Because I knew I was stiff. They didn't know. But I was like, I'm not going to get anything out of watching this, because now it's going to reinforce
right.
a way that I didn't like.
Which is probably not even the case to anybody right. who's watching it. But then that's in your head. I get that.
I think if you're going to watch it, at least for me, you almost have to study one thing. Because if you watch the whole thing, it doesn't really help you, because then you're just sitting back and judging it, unless you go in and really pick out, oh, okay, I want to make sure I say that ending and get really practical about it.
But I'm going to give out a bunch more dates of yours. I have them. There are so many because you're on an actual tour that what I'm going to do is, for the next couple of weeks, I'm just going to keep giving more dates. You sound so excited.
I love
about
it.
Your
I love
tour.
This. This is
oh, my fucking tour. Oh. Mary Lynn will be showing the same enthusiasm July 31st.
I told my husband, I said, you know, I didn't want to be out at 3 a.m. with those 22-year-olds. It's what I have to do when I'm on the road. I have to go to the bar and socialize. I have no choice.
It's so rough.
Yeah.
Well, you hang out with everybody after the show? For the most part,
I try not to, but every once in a while it happens.
You can't really slide out of there.
How much time can you spend in a room by yourself alone?
Oh, I could probably go for days.
Yeah, I do it for a while, and then it just kind of breaks, and I'm like, I got to talk to people.
I got
to
say hello to somebody. Yeah. They're all waiting outside for 5 hours. I got to go out there. I don't take out the garbage until nighttime. Because I don't want to talk to my neighbor.
Oh, I don't take it out because I feel like my fucking, the woman who, I feel like she's going to listen
to
love
now, you guys.
Fucking sees me taking the trash out, and as I'm walking, she's like, oh, she didn't recycle properly, and I'm going to fucking, like, I don't even think she thinks that, but I can't. Right.
So
I only
so
do
much
it when
better
I get
about
back.
Everything.
Oh my God.
That is nuts right there.
Yeah. I can't handle it. I only do it in
do
the dark.
Do you think she really is?
I feel it. And I honestly trust my instincts. So I
you
feel
guys
like
share the thing,
going
and you
on.
Think she's
going
to know that you put something in the wrong place.
I feel like she's like, oh, fucking Leah. And if something really offensive that I'm throwing away, I actually take it to the next corner. There's a Rite Aid, and I throw shit in there.
But wait, why can't you just put it in a bag? You think she's going to, like, go in the bag?
Yeah, I do. Well, she's the person in the building who, like, goes through and...
Oh, and has to
and
separate.
And has to separate. I separate, but there's people that don't separate.
See, but that would be awesome. Like, you put it out there and let her separate it for
no,
you. What
I can't.
The fuck?
I take anything I feel is going to be used against me later
but you,
to somebody else's trash
I get
can.
It. I get it.
You mean, know, like, if you didn't rinse out the can and put it in recycling and you just threw it in there,
oh, no,
you don't
that's
want her to
fine,
see that?
But, oh. like... you know, like weird sexual objects. Not weird, but you know, things that I feel
like
are not
hurtful. You're throwing out a whole bag of dildos in a given
weekend?
Well,
you gotta swap out. And like my political things that I feel like this is being saved and it's gonna raise my rent is what's happening. So I'm gonna take it to somebody else's fucking stuff.
This is deep.
Plus, we have guinea pigs that are illegal in our building, so I take all their shit to somebody else's fucking trash.
You think somebody's going to find guinea pig shit and know what that is?
Mm-hmm. They're going to be like, there's guinea pigs in this apartment building. She signed a lease saying no guinea pigs.
And here it is. Here's the pellet. Here's the shit pellet.
Tupac and R2-D2, I'm going to have to take them to New Jersey and let them go in the woods.
Don't they shit in like tiny little pellets, though? How are they going to know that?
There
could be a hamster.
Shit machines.
It's very New York, though, too. People are up in each other's
shit.
Yeah, up in your shit. It's like a small town.
Well, I'm in Long Island, but it's the same. Let me give you another example. How long ago was Hurricane Sandy? Now, about like a year and a half. A year and a half. It blew down a section of my fence. I have a couple of different houses around the backyard. Okay, so one section of the fence was a wooden one that belonged to my neighbor, and it blew down. Okay. I don't want to go over to him and be like, hey, your fence blew down. He obviously didn't want to come over to me. So, long story short, today I put a fence up, finally. I had somebody doing it. And I let that thing sit there flat on his lawn, pointing into his yard for the longest time just because I didn't want to go have a conversation.
Well, he didn't say anything to you either.
He didn't. And when the guys were there doing the fence today, he said, you want me to take this stuff out? I said, no, fuck him. Put the fence up and leave all the shit on his side. I did.
Why?
Because it's his fence.
That's the weirdest part of the story. I mean, oh, it's his fence.
It's his fence that fell backwards. So
I had it wrong. So you're saying why didn't he fix it?
Right, why didn't he come over and do it? But it's all because all I could have did was go, look, I'm going to put another fence up. You know, if you want to chip in, fine. If not, whatever. And that would have been the end of the conversation. But I had to go there and do it. And I didn't want to do it. Like, I don't want to see my neighbors. I don't want to talk to them.
It's very anxiety-producing.
I say hello to them, but I don't take... garbage bag will stay in the kitchen until sundown.
I can't answer.
And I'll take it out.
Yeah, it's terrifying. That's why I hate ordering food delivery. Because I feel like so rude that someone's going to bring food and I'm not going to invite them in to eat with me. You know what I mean? It just feels disrespectful.
Oh, thank you for the food.
So then I end up having like 45 minute conversations with them. And then nobody gets anything done because I'm still standing there. And then
that's
it's
a
so
bit
much.
In there. I guess you feel like you should invite them for dinner.
I can't. I feel rude just being like, oh, yeah, no, you're bringing me food now. Get out. That just seems disrespectful.
Yeah, Marilyn's right. You should definitely like invite somebody over and film it. Like, have the Chinese guy sit and eat.
I don't even realize it's weird.
And then
like,
to him, he'd be like,
everybody feel that way?
No. No, it's like my delivery guy, the Chinese food delivery guy, he looks like he's terrified to make eye contact. Like, he's already running down the stoop with his hand out, like, for the money. Like, he just doesn't even want to look at me. But before that, there was one that was just laughing all the time. Like, and he, like, I would open the door, ha, 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 ha. I like, what did he do to my food? Like, why is this guy?
I think people laugh when they're uncomfortable about communicating. But I know, like, all the backstories of everybody who delivers food, like, where they live, their families, what
really?
They do.
You just talk to them?
I can't not. I'm like, what's going on today? Oh, what'd you do this weekend? You're hanging out. But then you've set up a premise where you can never order food without an extra hour to have conversation. So it's exhausting.
That's pretty bizarre because you sound like you are really friendly, but that's maybe why with the neighbor you just want to shut off. Like, well, it's either everything or nothing maybe.
Yeah, it's because I have no because I don't. That's exactly what it is.
I think in summary, everyone's insane. I think we're all
insane. I don't think
I'm
insane whatsoever.
Oh, I think you're completely insane.
I don't at all. I'm so high functioning.
Mary Lynn, if I still had the text and I showed you after her set, like it actually ended with me saying, okay, it's time for you to shut the fuck up now. Like, you really needed to be cut down. And I was like, really? And then a few days later, I said, I'll get the video. I'll see if I can pull it off my DVR. It's like, get the video, but don't send me. Okay, wait, send me the video. Okay, don't send me the video. I don't know if I'm going to post it. Maybe I'm going to post it. I don't want to post it. I don't want to watch it. I don't want to. So it's not just you.
Might have to watch this video.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable with it now.
It's great. It's a great set. It's a great set. You just focused on the little
thing. I also left out one of my favorite tags, which is upsetting.
See what I mean? But nobody knows that.
I know it.
I know, but nobody else does.
It's almost like you want to be like, can you just put that in there? It's a great tag.
Mary Lynn will do stand-up. And she'll be taking out the garbage at night at Side Spinners in Tampa, Florida, July 31st through August 3rd. You could do long runs. Like, it's like 3-4 days most of the time.
Oh, man. Actually, August my family's coming with me to that one, so that'll be good.
That'll be cool. August 8th, the Melrose Improv in Los Angeles, California. For some reason, your publicist sent me the Melrose Improve.
Ooh.
Like, it needs to get better. Yeah. Like, you're going to improve the Melrose Improve. August 12th, 13th, Punchline Comedy Club, San Francisco, California, and the 14th through 16th at Parlor Live, Seattle, Washington.
Wow.
You have a lot more dates, and what we're going to do is for the next couple of weeks, each show, we're going to read more of them. We're going to pimp you out for the remainder
of
your tour.
Dude. Appreciate it.
I bring it. thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. I hope your shows go well. I'll see you Sunday night when you crush it.
Thanks for having me.
That's it.
It's been a real pleasure.
I'm glad.
Let's all take our trash out.
Let's do it.
Talk to our neighbors.
At night. It's too light out. Look at the light outside. I'm not taking it out now. I think one other thing I had on here was just so funny. It had nothing to... I know you did your one-woman show, Mary Lynn Spreads Her Legs.
Yes.
But I had... It was the first... It was about giving birth and everything, right? And...
I've since now, I thought it was a really clever title. It is kind of clever. But now I've turned against it because I think it's not fair because that title does sound porny and it's a mislead in the wrong direction. If you're going to title your show that, there should be porny stuff. And mine was about childbirth, which does come through your legs and come from putting something between your legs.
Did anyone answer that money back because it wasn't what you advertised?
No.
Well, I know because this...
People cried. They stood up. They clapped.
See, that's great.
Said, my life has changed. No.
Well, this show used to be called The Glory Hole. And I get it.
Oh.
You're absolutely right. I get it. We changed the name because it was so disgusting.
Glad you brought that up.
Yeah,
full
circle. If your publicist got the same email with the word glory hole in front of it, you would not be sitting here.
Yeah.
So little things do matter. But I think it's a great title. I think it's hysterical.
I do, too. It's catchy.
It was funny because I started taking notes when we first agreed to it, and then I went away from it, and I went back to it, and I just see one sentence. Just says, Mary Lynn spreads her legs. I'm like, what the fuck did I write?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's good. I think it has power. I like it.
Let's all spread our legs and take out the trash.
You can follow Mary Lynn on Twitter, Rice Cub, and the website is marylynnstandup.com.
Yeah.
And check out all the rest of the dates. Thank you again very much. Thank you for listening to The Hole.
Thank you, bye.
To the hole.